Welcome back to The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Life has its highs and its lows, and sometimes those lows can feel incredibly challenging to overcome. Our next guest had just graduated number one in her law school class, and from the outside looking in, life was good. But the truth was, she was grappling with a number of issues within, issues that brought her frighteningly close to the brink. Joining us now is Christy Tate to talk about her debut memoir, which traces her journey through mental health and finding restoration in group therapy. The book, out this week, is called Group: How One Therapist and a Circle of Strangers Saved My Life. Christy is a Chicago-based writer who has also been published in The Washington Post, in The New York Times Modern Love column, and in The Rumpus. Hello, Christy. Welcome to The 21st.
Thank you for having me.
And listeners, we do want to prepare you that this book and this conversation is going to touch on some sensitive topics pertaining to mental health. And just say, if you or someone you know is in need of help, you can contact the National Crisis Text Line, which provides free and confidential crisis intervention. Just text the word HOME to 741-741. That's HOME to 741-741. So, Christy, in the opening pages of your book, you set the scene, right? I mentioned it a moment ago. You just graduated at the top of your class in law school. You're driving through Chicago and fantasizing about your own death. When did you know you needed help, and what made you seek out group therapy?
Well, I think that I knew I was headed for trouble years before I actually reached out to Dr. Rosen and got into group therapy. I kept thinking that I could work my way out of the funk that I felt. And really, how I would describe it is I was really lonely. I was really isolated. I felt far apart from other people, and I didn't have intimate relationships, even though I desperately longed for them. And I just hid out in school, and I went to law school precisely because I knew my personal relationships were really dismal and I wasn't good at them. So I thought, well, I'll just take all my energy, I'll pour it into a career, and then I'll at least have that. But then right at the beginning of the book, that scene, I'm driving down Clybourne in Chicago, and I thought, I just want to die. I hope someone shoots me. And that was something beyond malaise. It really scared me.
Yeah. And I mean, you talk about you didn't necessarily take steps toward ending your life, but I mean, you had these fantasies. I don't know if you're comfortable sharing a little bit more about, you know, your thought process there. What was going through your mind?
Sure. What was so startling to me was I had just the week before gone to the bursar's office where I went to law school in Chicago, and they handed me a card with my class rank on it. And it said 1 out of 171 students. And I did have a moment of elation, and I could recognize that was an incredible accomplishment. I was going to have a wonderful professional future. Inside, I couldn't sustain any feeling of joy because I knew I'd picked the whole legal enterprise because of personal failures. And I'm driving with a bag of fruit and vegetables from Stanley's, and I'm eating a plum. And I just thought, I hope I die. And I that just can't be right. I can't be this poised for this amount of professional success while also hoping somebody shoots me. That disconnect was so startling. And, you know, I went back to my apartment and I didn't have anybody to call. And it was you know, when you're single and lonely and there's a holiday weekend when you imagine everybody else is on a boat or at a barbecue, and I didn't have anywhere to be, it felt like the end. Like, this is the end if something drastic doesn't happen.
Yeah. So you end up finding a therapist, and you write that your therapist, Dr. Rosen, issued a 9-word prescription that would help you navigate through some of the crises or feelings you were experiencing. Can you share that and how it was meaningful to you?
Sure. So I went into therapy thinking, okay, I'm going to pay the big bucks and I'm going to have this therapist. And he first tells me, well, I work in groups, and everything you want from therapy, which really boiled down to relationships, He said the only way to get there is through group. And I said, okay, fine. But I still, there was a part of me that wanted essentially a quick fix. I wanted a cure. And I would go to sessions early on and things would happen. Like he would offer me a suggestion about how to balance my studies and not study for 12 hours straight. And I would say, will this cure me? Will this cure me? And at one point, probably in the first 3 months, he said to me, you don't need a cure. You need a witness. And what he was offering and what I came to understand was there are no cures. There weren't for me and for what I was going through, but having witnesses meant I could, number one, disclose all the things, the secrets, the habits, all the shame I was holding for years and years and years. I could disclose that to a group of witnesses, my group, and I could let go of shame and I could learn some skills and I could have all this company and these witnesses so I could stop walking the earth thinking, I'm disgusting. Nobody knows me. If they knew, that all went away because now there was a group of people who knew all the mess and all my dirty laundry was in their hands and they continued to support me and love me. And that was radical.
So what did you the 9-word prescription? Can you say? I mean, what specifically that was?
The 9-word prescription was you don't need a cure, you need a witness.
So talk about then the witness aspect, right? Group therapy, for people maybe who haven't been through it. Like you're sitting in a circle with a bunch of strangers. I mean, just physically, what is this experience like in the room?
Yeah, people are really curious, and I had no idea until I finally started talking to people about group therapy that people just don't know this. And so the way that ours works is we sit in a circle, we all have the same kind of chair. The room is slightly bigger than the circle, so it's like a 14 by 14 room. And the therapist in my situation, Dr. Rosen, always sits in the same seat, and the rest of us sort of move around. Like you don't have an assigned chair, and the sessions are 90 minutes, and you don't get called on. You don't, no, nobody forces you to talk. But at the same time, the skills that you learn in group therapy include learning how to speak up for yourself and taking up space when other people are talking and offering your insight to other people. And what I love about this witness, the witness component is I don't have to just rely on Dr. Rosen. He's only one person. I also have five other group mates who can offer me their insight and their advice. Now, they don't have the training that Dr. Rosen has, but the advantage of them is outside of session, I can go to coffee with them. I can go over to their house when I've been broken up with, and I can cry into their throw pillows. And that was the beginning of really opening myself up even beyond just a 90-minute session.
I wonder if you had experience with the more traditional, one-on-one, laying on a couch sort of therapy, and if you could compare the two, or have you only done the sort of group project?
I had done a little bit of individual therapy in high school, and that didn't work because I wasn't honest. I went in there thinking, well, I'm going to show this therapist how functional and smart and lively I am. And I was 16, and that it doesn't work if you're not going to be honest. And I wasn't, and so that didn't work. And then I had a little bit in law school before I found Dr. Rosen, and I felt so many. First of all, I found it sort of boring. Like it was all I was the only engine in the relationship because the therapist didn't say much, and I was kind of bored. And I also found that I kind of wanted to perform, and I wanted to take care of the therapist, and it was harder to just be my authentic self. So when I land in group, and there's these five other people there, I can't hide from all five of them and the therapist. Like my true self came out by doing relationships in real time with other witnesses. And I found for me, the dynamism was fun and it was entertaining and it was so stimulating that when I went back to individual a couple times, sometimes I would go see Dr. Rosen individually and I'd be like, this is so boring. I can't wait to go back to group.
Listeners, if you're just tuning in, This is the 21st. We're speaking with Christy Tate, who is a Chicago-based writer. Her new memoir, her debut memoir, is called Group: How One Therapist and a Circle of Strangers Saved My Life. And the writing in this book is, it's remarkably transparent and raw, right? I mean, you reveal some very vulnerable aspects of yourself about binge eating apples and smashing dishes after sexual rejection, for example.
Yes.
I wonder, what is it like presenting such an open and self-reflective part of yourself for the whole world to read?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I get that all the time. And I really think that the answer comes back to the work I did in Group, which really, really convinced me that shame is a bigger problem than disclosure. And so what I've discovered since people have been discovering my book and some of the early readers and when I would workshop it, the places in the book where they resonated the most was where I was the most graphic or detailed. And that's when, for them, the story came alive. And so, as I learned in therapy, being fairly specific and detailed about whatever was troubling me, those same principles translate on the page. And the more detail I offered, and I'd already worked through everything in the book, I've already worked through, so there's very little shame about it. And now that it's out in the world and it's in strangers' hands, I'm really grateful. I don't have to wince or be ashamed of any of that, because I know what I went through and I feel entitled to share the story. And I don't feel like it's something to be ashamed of. I lived through that, and I offer my story to the world for whoever wants to read it.
You know, this book, I mean, the conversation we've been having makes it sound very serious, and certainly there are serious aspects, but there's humor too, right? Can you talk about the role of humor when dealing with these very serious personal issues for you?
Sure. That's one of the very first gifts I got in Group, which was, I would come in thinking, oh my God, you guys aren't going to believe what I did. And I would talk about, you know, last night I ate 6 apples, which is, that's bizarre, but it's not crazy. It's not beyond the pale. And somebody would laugh good-naturedly and crack a joke about it. And this was like my long held secret. And somebody was like laughing, like it's not that big of a deal. And so what I found in the process of therapy in Group was, these people that I've shared the circle with are smart, they're dynamic, they're invested in their mental health, and they're funny. And we've been together a long time. So we have a lot of like inside jokes and banter, and we can all laugh about, in my case, we can laugh about some of the men I dated, some of the decisions I made that didn't go well against their advice. And so I think humor is important when dealing with mental health issues are so dark. It's so scary to go into trauma, but having company and being willing to laugh when the joke appears, or to bring some kind of levity both to the writing of the story and the living of the story, it's the only way I could have survived the kind of deep trauma work required in group therapy.
Is group therapy a journey with an end, or is it a process like so much of therapy that's ongoing, right? Mental health is something people often have to work on their entire lives. Can you talk about that journey aspect of it?
Sure. I think that the journey of mental health is as individual as the people who need the work. And for some people, I have a lot of people in my life, they've come to Dr. Rosen, I've shared the circle with them, and they have moved on. And we've stayed close, and I've watched them pursue other therapies, or just sometimes people want to spend time without therapy, which I completely respect. For me personally, what I like about working with Dr. Rosen and going to group therapy is, there is an opportunity to stay. And what I like about that is, I came into group with longings and desperate for relationships. And now I have the relationships. I had more than I dreamed of, but I keep going back because I found I still need support. I still want company and levity and people to help me make the decisions I have to make now and reach for the things I want in my life that I don't have, even though they're very different. And I'm certainly not on the edge, But as I raise my children, as I face a pandemic, as I help aging parents, I still want my group. I still want my therapist. So my journey is ongoing, but I don't think there's any one size fits all.
Well, we've only got a couple of minutes left in our conversation. So I want to ask, I want to close by asking you, your memoir is careful not to be prescriptive or to endorse that group therapy is the answer for everyone and for all problems. And, you know, for some people, there is still a sort of a stigma to therapy. And so I wonder what do you hope that readers will gain from reading your memoir?
I certainly hope that they gain an understanding that there's more tools in the therapeutic toolbox than they maybe knew about. So now group is something for anybody who didn't know about it, now they know that that is a process that has worked at least for me. And also I hope that people will sort of have an appreciation for the fact that therapy, we wait Many the stigma I think comes from we wait to go to therapy in this country till there's a crisis until and I didn't go till I was on the brink. And had I gone sooner, and if I'd had treated my mental health like my dental health, like maybe get checked up more often before I have a, you know, before I need a root canal is the analogy. And I wish that people would sort of take an interest in their mental health when there's low grade issues or building issues and prevent this sort of like only emergency therapy. I think that's a disservice. That's a something in our culture that doesn't serve people.
Christy Tate is a Chicago-based writer. Her debut memoir is called Group: How One Therapist and a Circle of Strangers Saved My Life. Christy, thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st.
Thank you for having me.
Listeners, I do want to mention again, if you or someone you know feels like you need help, you can contact the National Crisis Text Line to provide free and confidential crisis intervention. Just text the word HOME to 741 741. That's home to 741 741. Coming up, we're going to have a shift in tone here on the 21st, be talking about spooky places in Illinois, haunted, allegedly haunted, I will say, places. That conversation is coming up after a short break. You're listening to the 21st. Stay with us.